On this week's episode of Our Beer Could Be Your Life, we get to chat with Kevin and Chris from Oh the Humanity, a nice local Boston band that apparently makes melodic hardcore, something you will find out I never heard of before, but apparently is a thing. We also talk about why you should only play shows in Boston on Mondays, apparently. That's the best time to play Boston. Or more so, why you just never play a show on a Monday in another town. And you should just go camping. So what do you think about that, Joe? Would you rather go camping on a Monday?
That sounds like an excellent Monday activity. You know, this is something we normally do on a Friday because we release these on Fridays. We're usually doing last week's, but now we're doing it on Monday and I just mowed my lawn. And ooh. I would much rather have been camping or playing a show than mowing my lawn. But in the absence of having a lawnmower beer to reward myself, I'm going to open a little teeny tiny can of Fanta.
Oh, it's adorable.
Adorable little, I don't know how many ounces, 7.5 ounces of soda. Probably enough sugar for the rest of the day. But we got these for cocktailing. They were fun. Apparently there's a Fall River cocktail, which is like orange soda and vodka.
Like that's just like the city of Fall River's official cocktail?
I can't speak for Fall River. I have no bearing on Fall River. But what I will say is that we were making chow mein sandwiches, which is a Fall River thing. And I have heard that orange soda goes good with it. This orange soda contains no juice, but it is naturally flavored somehow. So I do wish I had a nice golden beer, but I do have my last steel rail, which is kind of a throwback to where Kevin grew up, in my fridge for the next time I'm on my lawn. So yeah, cheers, man. What are you drinking over there on this Monday?
I am drinking a Culture Pop soda, watermelon, lime, and rosemary, because I'm about to go out for beers, so I didn't want to pregame on a Monday, so I get to go out to a restaurant and whoa, order a beverage, because we are finally, you know, approaching normalcy, which I feel like I'll be saying approaching normalcy for like 3 years.
Yeah, but the new normal is going to be talking about how it's normal again, or what the new normal is.
Yeah, we're going to meet friends. We're going to sit outside at a lovely place called Lulu's in Alston.
Nice. So, and you know what? You could go there and order a beer and not order food, which is not something we've been able to do in the last, you know, however long it's been in this new normal. But, you know, Kevin and Chris had the experience of, I guess Kevin became a father during quarantine, and they put out a record during quarantine, which is you'll hear us talk about. It was not the intention, and they avoided the temptation of the Kanye West approach of finishing the thing and then fixing the thing and then fixing the thing and then changing the thing. And you know what? The record sounds great. It is a self-titled debut for Hell Minded Records, and you should buy it from their Bandcamp.
You should 100% do that. I couldn't imagine. They finished it before as quarantine was starting. I couldn't imagine going like, we'll just sit on this for 12 months. Like I would be itching to just change every little thing that I heard. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I could do this slightly different. Not necessarily better, but I could just always do it slightly different.
Yeah, they resisted that urge and sound like they had good counsel because the record sounds fucking great. So more power to those guys. And you know, we talked so much about melodic hardcore because I asked the question about if they consider themselves melodic hardcore because people want to put them in that box. And it got me thinking after our conversation about what that could entail and what that could encompass. So I'll tell you what I was listening to a lot this weekend is the most recent one song, 90 minute 4 LP release from Fucked Up, Year of the Horse. Year of the Horse is a Toronto hardcore band that this hardcore record incorporates like classic rock, folk, freak folk, prog, fucking trumpets and cornets. And there is melody and it is hardcore. And I don't think that's what melodic hardcore means, but I really liked it. And I'm still picking my way through it. And I've yet to find, I should say that my partner does not enjoy this record and would prefer that I stop playing it. And I've yet to find anyone else who's as into it. I think our previous guest of ours, Daniel Carswell from Facebook, tells me that he is also a very big fan. So maybe I should just hit him up and we should just talk about You're the Horse.
Just have like one long chat about You're the Horse.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
As long as the record. Analyze every minute of the record with Dan to have a nice corresponding track for the record.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe I'll do that. They actually just announced that they're going to be playing Boston in January, and they're going to be playing, this is the 10-year anniversary of Daniel Comes to Life. So yeah, anyway, that's what I was listening to from Malik. Have you listened to anything good this weekend?
Iron Sheik put out a new song, which I was very thrilled to hear. The new Slater Kinney, I really like, although I will say that the drums aren't as good because Janet left and it's just the truth. But funny story about listening to the Iron Sheik song, and I probably am the only one who'll find this amusing, is I'm like blasting it while driving the Mass Pike to the brewery. And I'm like, I should listen to like other Iron Sheik too, because it made me think of it. And the last Iron Sheik album is about his friend dying and going through a divorce. And I'm just like thinking about our friend that passed away recently, just like bawling on the Mass Pike, doing like 95 miles per hour. So I have no idea what anyone, if anyone got to witness that, I feel like it's got to be like the best scene of just me like crying, thinking about our friend who passed away. Also cranking Iron Sheik.
Did you start this by saying this is hilarious?
This is hilarious to me. I mean, it's over, you know, it's I'm not going to say it's not, you know, I cried for something that I loved and, you know, it's now it's a funny story to me afterwards.
Yeah. Yeah. The 95 mile an hour crying on I-90 thing. I mean, I just want you to be careful, my friend.
You know, it's a Prius, so it definitely gets up there. It's probably more like 85.
It tells you it's going 90, but that's really 60 miles an hour. And that's what 60 miles an hour feels like.
It just like gives you like a little thumbs up, like you're cool, man. Yeah, you got that up there. We swear.
Does your Prius have a power button?
Probably. I don't touch the buttons in there.
Ours has a mode. So listeners, we have two slightly different type of Prii. Ours has a mode, an eco mode that it's in most of the time. But if you need it, there's a power mode. And you have to press this button and the engine like whirs a little bit more. And that's it. That's all you get. You get a little bit more oomph.
And that's how you tow your boat.
That's exactly how you would tow your boat. It's essentially whatever that nitrous button is in all those old movies where you press this button and the car goes really fast and shoots blue flames. It's like that, but electricity and much less cool. I like our soda combinations for a non-beer back and forth, because you basically have the craft beer of sodas, a fruit and herb infused kombucha soda, which I assume has some of those real things in it.
I think that it claims it does. It has organic juice and you know, stuff like that. So
I'm over here rocking the Budweiser of products in a Fanta. How about that? I'm pretty sure Fanta soda. Fanta comes from originally Germany. And my understanding of it is that it was the replacement when Coke was not available in Germany. Fanta was the alternative for the German market, you know, at a time when Germany and the rest of the world weren't getting along so well. And now Fanta is just a delicious little soda in a tiny little can. How about that? I could be making most of that up. I should source that, but
you know. It's fact now. Two white guys on a podcast said it. It is fact.
Yes, that's correct. But yeah, look it up. Fantasy. I think that's what it stands for.
You know, I don't feel that bad. We're not talking that much beer because luckily, Oh, the Humanity came prepared and they talked a lot of beer. So there's a lot more beer talk after this.
That's true.
I don't feel so bad.
Yeah, Chris worked at a pretty famous account in Somerville called Dave's Fresh Pasta, which is still there, repping Dave. And we talked, Andy wasn't on the call, but Andy, who is their bass player, for many years worked at the Tap Brewery in Haverhill, which we also reminisce about, a brewery that I would like to visit again now that we've spent so much time talking about it. And I would like some leather lips, but another time.
I like Haverhill. I like the tap. There's a new barbecue place up there, which I hope made it through COVID. I haven't been back there since, but that was really awesome. That was like two doors down from the tap. So
nice.
I would like to go to that place. There's the barber shop next door that I went once to get my hair cut when I worked in Haverhill when I actually was on the road for my job. So, you know, What fond memories of Haverhill?
Haircuts, barbecue, occasional beers.
I took my now wife on our second or third date to the Peddler's Daughter in Haverhill because it was recommended to me because they made their own ketchup. That was their selling point. And I was like, cool, let's do that.
I'm going to make this one my wife. Let me show you the fancy place that makes their own. It's like the Heinz factory you went to. That's another option for a place that makes their own.
Amazingly, I actually, telling them that story about taking my wife there did not get me to sell our beer, you know, there. So,
yeah,
they did not give a shit about that story.
Well, you know what? Industry insider fact. Heinz ketchup is usually better than anything any restaurant is cooking up. I'm sure that ketchup was delicious. Didn't have the 55 items in it or whatever. 57.
There are not 57 items in Heinz ketchup. No. That is the number of pickles that they make.
Sure. Thank you for that information. Again, two white guys said it. It must be true.
That one is true. I don't know about your story, but that story is true.
Nazi soda and the inside of the Heinz pickle factory. Yeah. All right. This is it. We didn't get a chance to tell a Haverhill anecdote either because we kind of glossed over the tap. But I heard a story once that there was a phone scam being run on behalf of the Haverhill Savings Bank. And it went down in flames because the people calling were calling from Haverhill Bank. People were like, what the fuck is Haverhill? I always thought that was really funny. It's like, you mean Haverhill. Haverhill.
Yeah,
what up, Haverhill? We're shouting out Haverhill, Fall River today. Any other towns?
As far away as you can get in Massachusetts.
You got to keep it balanced, okay? There, you know? You got to keep it balanced. We want both the North and the South Shore. But we don't talk about Western Mass here. Where I'm currently standing in Waltham is Western Massachusetts.
Right. There's no bands based in or out of, you know, Northampton that we'd ever want to talk to, so... We will just continue to ignore Western Mass.
Yeah. What? Maybe someday we'll have the opportunity to discuss. I think we actually talk a little bit about Amherst, which must be Western Mass. Because I don't know where it is.
Yeah, it definitely.
It seems west. It's west enough.
It's Western Mass.
Well, I thought it was really fun to catch up with Kevin and Chris. And again, like you said, we talked so much beer with those guys. It was really fun to... I'm still thinking about... hot old ales in the back of the third row of an SUV. You'll find out why inside this podcast. So enjoy our chat, my friends. Bye, Oz.
See you later, Joe.
Bye to each other usually.
Have a great weekend.
Have a great weekend. This is a good end. We should leave it all in, Dennis. Don't fix this in post.
We missed you, Dennis. Bye. But since we have two people on here, we should introduce these two people. Right, Joe?
Yeah.
Let's make this is audio, so they can't see the names here.
Oh, the podcast has started.
Well, you know, we have
there's
a third member of our podcast who does, you know, named Dennis, who fixes everything in post. So at some point he'll find a time where it makes sense. Right now, though, I just see Kevin and Andrea in the chat, and I need to introduce both of you guys.
It's actually Chris, but
I figured. I thought so.
It's my wife's. It's my wife's Zoom account.
We are on Matt's wife's Zoom account as well, but you know, that's how we do.
I know. I think a lot of people are living like that.
Yeah.
This horrible Zoom life that we've slipped
on. It ain't all bad. I mean, you guys put out a record. We started a podcast and we still made beer. So, you know, I don't know. We did something.
We're still here.
We survived it. We're all 10 years older than we were a year ago. Whatever.
I was trying to say last year just didn't count. We're like the age that we should have been if last year didn't happen.
So I'm gonna...
If that was only true. My hairline does not reflect that statement, but I wish that was crushing true.
Weight of last year.
Yeah, somebody made fun of my hair and mustache today. Some let's say older goobers, and I was like, listen, man, this is a pandemic. I'm just living the pandemic life. The rest of my life, I'm doing whatever the fuck I want. My facial hair and hair. So,
yeah, man, you earned it.
Right, we survived it. Hey, so Kevin and Chris, what do you guys do in the band? Oh, the Humanity.
Hey, I'm Kevin. I sing for the band.
And I'm Chris. I play guitar in the band.
Exciting. And
Joe doesn't get to talk any bass stuff this week. It's going to be very disappointing.
Oh, Andy says hi, Joe.
I do know Andy.
He says hi.
Hi, Andy. Andy worked at the Tap last I caught up with him. I don't know that the Tap is still a thing. It is. Does he still work there?
No, he works for some other beer distribution company or something.
Yeah,
still in the industry.
Cool. So you guys are very beer adjacent, very very much so.
Oh, yeah,
love it.
Yeah, they had a big changing of the guard at the Tap at one point, handful of years back. Like at one point, I was friends with pretty much everyone there and just would like roll up, like not knowing who was around, and just like hang out in the brewery area, play darts, drink some stuff right off the the machine.
Sure.
Our first demo was recorded at the Tap in like their they had extra like warehouse space next to the brewery space, and like that's where we recorded our first like 4-song demo.
We called it the brewery sessions.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome.
My favorite unrelated stat about the Tap is that despite being a brewery, their best selling drink was Jameson.
I'm pretty sure that stat still survives to this day.
Love that.
I'm pretty sure.
It's just Haverhill through and through right
there. Yep. Uh-huh. Well, I do remember having like a very aggressive, Annie may have given this to me, so I'm sorry I don't have this anymore. I had a very aggressive leather lips t-shirt with that the red-headed lady on the back of it, like full graphic print back of the shirt.
I think I might have had that too.
He may have given those
at
to
some point.
A lot of people.
That sounds really familiar.
That beer though.
I think they brought back Leather Lips recently, like for like a limited run thing. I think they brought that back. Not that I ever need to taste. I drink so much room temperature to hot Leather Lips.
Oh my god.
Like
the late 2000s mid to late 2000s. Like I never need to taste that beer again.
Yeah.
it's fine.
I would be curious to know what my palate would do with that. I remember there was kind of like the heyday of the like how hoppy, how intense can you take kind of beer thing. Now, you know, at some point we were like, maybe we should just taste things that like taste nice and are good and don't make my mouth hurt every time.
You're not fighting it to drink it. You're just like,
ugh. I mean, Stone's still doubling down on the one hand with the like, you know, you're not cool enough to drink this beer thing with Arrogant Bastard. So like, you know, that's one hand of Stone. The other hand is trying to sell, so Buena Vista hard seltzer with lime in it. So I don't know. Mm. None of us know what we're doing these days. So why not drink Leather Lips?
Everyone's getting in that seltzer game.
Yeah. Well, there's always mandatory seltzer talk in this beer podcast because we can't help it. Usually non-alcoholic seltzer because we both quite like non-alcoholic seltzer. And
Yeah, I'm polar loyal in this house.
Yeah, polar loyal at work.
It's a very strong New England thing to be loyal to polar. Do you claim the bubbles are the best in them too? Because that is definitely my like favorite, what everyone says.
I think the bubbles are perfect, except for, so I love the ruby red grapefruit out of a can, but the bottles, every time I buy them, undercarbonated. So polar, if you're listening to this pod, I'm sure you are, for whatever reason, your grapefruit liter bottles of seltzer are undercarbonated. Fix it. Everything else is fantastic.
And I don't drink seltzer, so.
I have nothing to contribute.
I have nothing. I will listen. I'll listen to this segment.
Yeah.
Or talk about how I don't drink seltzer.
I mean, I don't think we need to talk anymore about seltzer. But I, you know what? We usually end talking about beers, but you guys gave us two. So I feel like since I'm actively drinking a beer you guys suggested, I'm drinking Steel Rail Pale Ale.
Oh,
extra pale ale.
Well, I have a beer open, but my on deck will be
very nice, very nice. And I'm really enjoying this beer. It has been a long time. I wish I could have found this in a fresh 22 ounce bottle, because that is like in my mind how this beer exists. But mm-hmm. in reality, it is mm-hmm. a canned product now.
Yep.
I remember my first staff pick at a store I worked at that sold beer was, I think, that 22 ounce bottle of Steel Rail. Mm.
This is going back.
I grew up in Western Mass, and like when I turned 21, like Steel Rail was the like craft option that like wasn't just like a shitty domestic. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like if you wanted something that wasn't a Bud Light, Miller Lite, whatever, like Steel Rail was it, and it only cost like $2.50 or whatever. You know what I mean? So it's like delicious. It's on tap everywhere. Back then there weren't a ton of like, you know, craft options at every place you went to. So to have something was great. You know, sometimes they would have like the Shabadoo on or some other like seasonal option from BBC. But yeah, Steel Rail was always there for me, always pretty cheap and tasty.
Hell yeah.
Is it still listed as an extra pale? Sure is.
Oh, I don't know what's extra. I'm looking for the ABV on this thing.
It's got to be like 5 on the nose.
Yeah, I mean, it seems that way. It tastes like that.
There's a bowling alley in like Greenfield that I loved because the Steel Rails were $2 a pop there. Mm. So we just like bowl all night and drink $2 Steel Rails.
That sounds like a fine night.
I did not grow up in Western Massachusetts, so I don't have the young connection to it. But I did tour that brewery right early on in my craft like journey, if you will, and really loved their like philosophy. And there's something that their owner or brewer said when we were kind of talking about, I was very young and very like arrogant about what, you know, you should consume. And, you know, I said something offhand and rude about Blue Moon being like fake craft beer. He's like, listen, man, whatever gets people like thinking about what they drink, and like, we got to be thankful that they're thinking about it at all. I was like, all right, that's a nice way to put it. So, my actual like price, like when I think about those bottles and drinking them somewhere, I think it was for a long time, my New England Revolution, one stand had the coffee porter for $12, and they gave you like a 22 ounce essentially bucket. And frequently they would pour this thing into the bucket and like the top would be frozen, cause we're going to Revs games in like, you know, April. I'd be like, well, that and the, you know, they're putting the fucking beer in a freezer, and the other problem with that, that arrangement. But that's, much love to Berkshire.
I think it's the last time I had a bottle, actually, was at a Revs game. Like, I don't think I've bought a bottle of BBC locally in quite some time. I'll get cans every so often, but yeah, it's more of a nostalgia thing now. I don't get it all the time, but when I have it, I'm very happy.
Yeah, it's a good beer. It's a solid, I can see how it would be a replacement for somebody if you were like in a towny bar and someone asked for a Budweiser. You can be like, you can drink this. Sure. It's a really nice tasting beer, though. We have had guests that have pushed us to drink all sorts of weird, crappy things. So I'm very excited to drink a good beer. And I have a replacement for, which we'll, I guess, talk about a little bit later, about brown ales, something else we quite enjoy. But can we talk about your record that came out in April?
Sure.
April, is that right?
Mm-hmm.
When did you guys start working on this?
We started tracking April of what, Chris,
2019. Yeah, April 2019.
That's right.
Yeah, we kind of dragged it out over a long period of time, like sort of intentionally, sort of not intentionally, but we got cracking on it. Like we went in, we knew we weren't finishing it. We just went in for like 3 days with the goal of just like getting all the basics done, you know, like drums, bass, and as much guitar as we could have. Like, I don't think we even finished writing like lead lines or solos or vocals or melodies or anything like that. But we wanted to get cracking on it and like use the basics to like write the rest of the stuff. So it kind of dragged out over, I don't know, we finished it when, Kevin, like a month before the pandemic or like 2 weeks before the pandemic or something.
Yeah. Can I just say how crazy it is that I can be off by an entire year? Like, this is the only time in my life where like something this important to me, I can be like, I don't know, it could be this year or this other year. Yeah. Like, time means nothing. But yeah, it took us a whole year, almost to the month. Like, we got together for a group session to like listen through everything, make sure we were happy with it, you know, make sure there was nothing else to add, did some group vocals. And then the pandemic hit 2 weeks later, something like that. So we were like super lucky to be able to have that like one last session to at least have tracking done. And then the mixing process and the mastering process all happened in lockdown.
A nice slow 1 year mix and master, the standard.
Well, it was like, so we did the tracking the weekend of tracking that Chris talked about. And then the guys went in for another session in the summer to do leads and some guitar work. And then my wife was pregnant and we had our daughter that September. So like that August, like leading up to that, I wasn't going to the studio or anything. So it was like, I'm going to be home, you know? And like, I had a few more songs that like I didn't have lyrics done for, didn't have like melodies completely done for, but I had tracked like a significant portion of my stuff. Little did I understand how all consuming having like a new baby is. I'm like, I'll find time to finish this. And then it was like, oh, I need to find time to finish this. So that fall was a really weird, awesome time, like awesome for my family and stuff, but very weird to try to be creative while being like exhausted all the time and adjusting to like a completely new way of living. Chris helped me with lyrics on two of the songs on this album, which we had never worked together that way before, but it turned out to be an awesome like pairing. Like, he had some great ideas and I was able to look at the lyrics like not as my own, right? They weren't as precious to me as like the stuff that I write is, you know, not that the words aren't important, but like, it's just completely different, right? Than like working on stuff in your own head. So yeah, he was a huge help to me to wrap that up. So yeah, that's why it took so long, basically. Like, we probably would have had it done much, much sooner, but you know, life.
Yeah, life.
Life, and then the world fell apart. So you couldn't even release it for anybody.
Yeah.
That must have just been the most annoying thing, to like sit on a record for a year and you're just like, let's put it out. I don't care if there's nothing happening. I just want it out.
Yeah. So that was a conversation we had. We took us like what, Chris, like a month to mix it ish. And then another couple weeks to master it.
Yeah. It was like, it was actually sort of like a blessing in disguise almost, because like, if you remember, those first couple months of the pandemic were just like, I mean, it was just kind of miserable. Like, there was nothing going on. You couldn't do any of the stuff you normally did. Like, it was so all consuming. You were thinking about it all the time, and trying to get the record all mixed and mastered and everything gave us something to kind of do and focus on outside of, you know, just like the normal bullshit that was happening all around us. So we would, a good friend of ours, recorded it and mixed it all for us. And so he would kind of do his thing with mixing it, and he would give us the mixes and we'd all make our notes. And then we would be scheduling times where we could get together and like do a call like this or something just to talk about it. So it was just something to look forward to and something to work on outside of just what was going on in the world. So it was kind of good, and also kind of made us take our time and put it out the way we wanted to. I mean, we were, before the pandemic hit, we had a bunch of really cool shows that were starting to line up, and we're like, oh man, we gotta get this record done. Kevin's talking about just like throwing it up there, up online, digitally.
I was so close, and all this stuff.
And because the pandemic hit, we actually took some time and kind of did it the way that we really wanted to, as opposed to just being like, cool, we got a record.
Right.
There, it exists in the world. So yeah, I mean, obviously you're not happy that it all happened, but I can look at it and be like, all right, that's something positive that at least came out of it. We were able to do something positive while, you know, the shitstorm was happening around us.
So after having this record for a year, recorded it, you sat on it, you still went with the instrumental fade out on Perspective, which is like a classic like 80s Motley Crue move. So I have a lot of respect for that.
Oh man, there's
just the most minor of note on that, of something that I'm just like, yeah, I love, like, just have that straight guitar instrumental fade out.
I mean, where else on the record are you going to have a fade out that long? Because like, that's what that song was. And like, yeah, we could have like changed it or trimmed it or whatever. But like, why not? If it's there.
It's perfect. Yeah.
We also were trying not
to. Next one, if you do one like the chorus, you'll just go like straight Aerosmith and repeat that chorus over and over again as you fade out. Just complete that whole cycle of it.
We were kind of disciplined in like, once we decided it was done, it was done. So, I mean, we'd be listening back like over the course of the year being like, you know, like you do when you're looking back on something that you've already finished and being like, oh man, wish we didn't do it like that. Wish we didn't do it like that. Or wish we did this different. But we were pretty good about just being like, nope, it's done. Time to think about something else.
Yeah, it's like it's not released yet, right? But you like the recordings still exist and you listen to them. At least I was listening to them a lot to try to, like, you know, make sure I remembered all the words, like remembered how the songs went, so that when we did get back to practicing and stuff, that like I wasn't starting from scratch. Because some of these songs I wrote in a bubble, like until we practiced the last 2 weeks, which were our first practices like since the pandemic. I had never sung these songs like with these guys, because I wrote them in a vacuum, like from like infant land, my home. So like, you know, I was listening, going for runs, listening to the record, like trying to like keep it in my head, like sort of like, you know, practicing on my own. And you hear things, right? But the record's not out. So you have this weird middle ground of like, usually you're having those moments of, ah, we could have done that different, when the record already is out there. So you're like, ah, nothing you can do. But like, that's not really out there yet, but still it's like, leave it. It's,
you don't want to get in a,
there's always those things though, right, that you would take back if you could. But
you know, you don't want to get in a Life of Pablo situation and be changing the record one that's already released. This is a Kanye reference for Kanye fans, of which we probably don't know very many. Anyway,
I think Teeny, our drummer, is into some of his older catalog,
his newer works,
recent exploits.
I gotta say, Kevin, your voice is really like developed really nicely. It feels like really sits perfectly in the mix with the rest of the band. And you know, you've got, I don't know, there's a lot of power I hear from you. I really appreciate it. I think like listening back to some of your earlier stuff into this, I just think it's just, you know, you just sound really developed and really confident, and I think it sounds really cool.
Thanks. I appreciate that. You know, when I first joined this band, I sort of felt like an obligation to do like the yelly singy thing. Like I felt like that's what was going to fit, because these guys had written a bunch of these songs prior to me joining. I was the last piece.
Not these songs, but like,
sure.
Our old.
Yeah. When we first started. So I sort of felt like that's what fit. So like in some of the earlier recordings, you'll hear me sort of forcing that thing. And now that we're in the ninth year of being in this band, it's like I sort of felt like, okay, I think I've found what I want to do, like what I want to sound like on a record. And since we were putting out a new full length, I was like, you know, there's some of those moments where I get a little more gritty, but like I want to like sing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like I wanna sing it the way I want to sing it. And I think this record sounds the most like us, like as individuals and as a band than anything we've put out yet, which is to me like the crowning achievement of this record. Like, I think this release is the most us of anything we've put out.
I think like also a song like Everyone in Gainesville, right? Like, I feel like in a different year, that song would be kind of like a lighter, fun song, like lyrically, and listening to it with the pandemic in mind, I'm thinking like, man, like this sounds like a party and this sounds fun. And you know, that didn't happen this year. So there's almost like a bittersweet note to that, that I don't know if it's intentional or if it's just, you know, just how it played out in this last year. But I think it's a nice, like emotional note in the beginning of the record that really like sucked me into it.
Yeah. That song is one of the, we had a few songs on this record that we had been playing out for a while before tracking this, and that was one of them. So no, it was not intentional, but I get it, because I listened to that song during the pandemic and I was like, man, what a bummer. I'd rather be partying with my friends. Yeah, that song, a couple others we had played, you know, kind of working the way we do, you know, playing shows, touring, working shows out, you know, on the road. And this was the first release that we've had where the majority of the songs we've never played live in front of people. Like, we just recorded them. So now that shows are coming back, we'll get to actually play some of these in front of humans, which is kind of wild. So like, we're practicing them now, you know, at the space and getting ready to gig again. It's kind of weird. I don't know if it's weird for you, Chris, but it's definitely weird for me to like be playing some of these songs and like not have work them out in front of people, because, you know, you can feel if something's working or not when you're performing, right? You can feel if people are into it or not. Like, some of these songs, like, never gotten that feedback before, so it's just kind of weird, you know,
like learning your own songs
sort of. Yeah,
I don't remember any of my old band songs.
That's not accurate.
It's kind of accurate. I do not remember how they all go.
Okay,
I don't remember some of this band's songs, so
I have a pretty good muscle memory. I can usually remember them. There were a couple we were trying last night, which I would call deep cuts from the record, that I was struggling with pretty good. So I don't know if we're going to play all of them. But it's like you were saying, like, who knows which ones will feel good live and which ones won't. I mean, it doesn't always work out that the ones that you like the way they came out recorded are fun to play, or other people think they're fun to play or
fun to watch. Yeah, we've definitely had that where like we enjoy playing it, but we're not getting the feedback, you know, from the people right. Watching us, like we're shredding and this is really fun for us, but people are like, okay, we get it, you guys play guitar fast.
There's definitely been songs where we've looked at each other and we're writing a set list and we're like, why do we always put this one on the set list? No one likes it but us.
You gotta have some fun while you're at it, I assume. That's part of it.
Oh yeah.
Yeah,
I mean, listen, a band that I used to be in that Kevin probably saw, we used to start with like fucking covers of like hip-hop like samples for no reason. They never went over well, but our drummer and loved it, and then we all were just like, yeah, this is funny just to us.
To be young again.
Yep, not happening.
I have the similar thing. I used to do a acapella version of Boys of Summer for like 2 minutes before everyone came in, and I'm the only one who thought it was funny, but like I loved it.
If I were at that show, I probably would have thought it was funny.
Yeah, same.
Well, if we only can self-select our audiences for such comedic genius.
Yeah,
seriously,
take me back.
Hey, Chris, you said you worked at some stores. You have some experience working and plying our trade.
So I worked at a store in Davis Square in Somerville for a few years.
Downtown Wine and Spirits?
No.
Or Dave's Fresh Pasta.
Dave's Fresh Pasta. I basically worked the deli counter there for like 5 years, mostly while I was in college. And yeah, it was pretty cool because I think I put together the beer orders like once or twice or something, but my buddy Josh was ordering the beer at the time. And we all got to drink a lot of the beer. Dave, so the owner of that store is actually a dude named Dave, and he's actually in the store pretty much 5 days a week. And he was totally cool with just being like, hey, at the end of your shift, you know, feel free to crack a six pack among everyone working, or, you know, maybe more than a six pack, as it were. But But yeah, we got to have some input on what we were bringing into the store and got to talk to some of the distributors that were coming in. And this was back like, I worked there from like 2009 to 2014. So the craft beer game was definitely changing around that time. So people were coming in there with, you know, with newer beers and things like that. But yeah, it was fun. Like I didn't specifically work in the beer part of the store, but like, you know, everyone, it wasn't a big store. So everyone kind of like filled in where they could. But yeah, got to try a lot of really cool beer that I probably wouldn't have tried otherwise.
And, you were definitely up on beers that like we hadn't tried yet. Be like, oh, I tried that at the store. Like I can remember you saying that like a bunch.
For sure, yeah, because we would do like tastings and stuff like that. And so like if we liked something, we'd be like, you know, grab a six pack, stick it in our little deli cooler. And once, I mean, we didn't wait till the end of the day. Sometimes we started a little earlier than others, but I mean, if you really dug something, you would start, you know, drinking it at the store and you could bring some home and all this kind of stuff. Like I remember my buddy Sam, who is the wine buyer there, drank nothing but Hop Nosh. Do you remember yes, Hop Nosh?
I do.
He drank yep, nothing but that for like a year straight. Like that was the only beer he would ever take home. That was the only beer he would ever have at the store. Like that was his jam. So yeah, it was pretty cool.
It's funny. Like I feel like the days of that type of beer loyalty are waning, you know. People who are really into beer now are like trying to try everything they can try. And, you know, when I go to stores and I see people like making a mixed four pack, you know, spending 10 minutes to like pick out the things in their mixed four pack rather than just like grabbing a pack of something, I think it makes a little part of me just die just a little bit.
I spend way too much time picking out beer at a store, and I'll admit it.
It's fun to do that.
It is fun. And sometimes I'm kind of like arguing with myself, like, just get the thing, you know, you like, but there's another side of my brain saying, yeah, but you've bought that like the last several times you've been in here, try something new. So there's a balance.
To Joe's point, the thing that like drives me nuts is like just getting like one of something. It's like, give it a couple tries, right? You know, have a few of those.
Yeah, I have no interest. I have no interest in the tall can
of all days, though. No matter what I'm getting, I always walk out of the store with a tall can of all day because it's just like it's there and it's $2. Right, right. Like I'm gonna get one.
It's good to have a set, you know, a code, if you will. My code is to always purchase a bottle of something or bottles of something because I like bottles of beer, and if I don't buy them, I can't complain that they're not available or fresh. So that's a personal code, but I respect all codes when it comes to this sort of thing.
That's actually not a bad code because you can try something new, four pack, six pack, or yeah, whatever, something else, and or six pack is something you always like to get, and then boom, you got your new bottle right there.
That's too. Right. And there are still really cool beers that are available in bottles only. You know, fewer by the day as we drink our cans of Steel Rail Extra Pale. This being an audio medium and the fact that you were not highlighted, I don't know what you're holding up. So let's talk about it, Oz. What do you got?
I just have a classic long trail ale.
Oh yeah.
Cause I couldn't find any what hit the trail. Is that what the other one that we yeah, talked about? So I just went with classic long trail ale.
All right. So this would have been my pick,
right,
then.
Right.
Cause Kevin was asking me of like a beer that like I remember or that means something to me. And I said Long Trail Harvest. Right. Which is a yep, seasonal, but the hit the trail is very similar, and I think you can get that year round. I had a couple of cans in my fridge like a week or two ago. It may have been from mixed pack, but
yeah, I just grabbed classic long trail beer that I drank so much of back in the day. That was just always there. It was good draft. I think People's Republic in Cambridge used to have it on draft. Used to play darts and drink it all the time. It was delicious. It's still fucking delicious.
So I looked for that beer and could not find it. So I had to look up what it was. Said it was a brown ale. So I went with one of my favorite brown ales, which is Avery's Ellie's Old Brown Ale. So that is what I've got here. And I have to thank you for it because even just smelling it, I know that I'm going to really enjoy this can. It's been a long fucking time since I've had this beer, or I think maybe even a canned brown ale. It's been a very long time. So much respect.
Going back to when I was working at that store, I remember when I was first starting there in like 2009, that was when people were getting really into IPAs and like porters and stouts at the time. And I remember at the time, I wasn't really into either of them, but I was really into brown ales. So that probably would have been the era that I was drawing on when I was asked for a beer, and I immediately said like a brown ale from the Long Trail.
I have to cop to having looking for the maximum amount of selection. I decided to go to Total Wines, thinking like if it's going to be available right now, it's probably going to be here. And the IPA section of singles is like 4 carols long, and the brown ale section is like 1.5 on the bottom. And like some of the cans are from like 2019. I was like, I got a fresh can, but like, I think people like yourself and me that give a shit about brown ales, we're just not in the majority at the moment.
I mean, I love IPAs, but I definitely am feeling that IPA fatigue.
It's real, man.
Give me a solid Pilsner. Like, you know what I mean? A Kolsch on a hot day. Like that to me is like up top of things that I love to drink. Like I love an IPA or what, like I love all craft beer, but lately I just want something that's like really tasty, crisp, and like easy to drink. You know, it doesn't need to be like strat racing down my street. Doesn't need to be like overly exciting. Just needs to be like tasty. Sure. You know?
Right. We don't need to punish our mouths with the beers we're drinking just to prove that we can. You know, that's not required exactly these days. Mm-hmm. I'm curious, you know, you guys mentioned having done some touring. I'm curious if like any of that has brought you to places with beers that you found interesting in your travels that have left an impression on you.
Yeah, I don't know if it's specific beers, but we definitely like, we played, I can remember we played a show in Maine that we specifically went up early so we could go to Bissell for the afternoon, you know, because it's like a beer destination and like cool place to hang and they make great beer. On one of our last short tours with our friends in the meantime, they're from Peabody. They put out a new record during the quarantine. So anyone listening, check out their new EP. It's awesome. But we did a short little tour with them. And we went to a brewery in Connecticut to kill some time before our show. It was Front Porch Brewing, I think I'm pretty sure it was the name of the place. I'd never been there before. We literally just like looked up the venue and said like breweries near Cherry Street Station. And like they were right up the street. So we went there and played board games for a couple hours and had beers there. And it was awesome. So it's less like a specific beer that makes an impression, but we definitely, if we're in, if we have time to kill, that's something we're doing. If we don't need to sleep or eat, that's probably what we're doing.
I kind of like to think of like beer in the sense of like back in the day, you're like traveling from town to town on like a horse, and it's like, oh yeah, there's an inn in that town. Yeah, they have really good beer there. You know, like I like to think of like certain kinds of beer in certain areas. Like the last time we've got some buddies out in Buffalo that have let us play at their house a bunch and, you know, set up a bunch of shows for us. And when we show up there, we try to have like some like Genesee or some like Labatt or something. And they're like, all right, yeah, you guys are drinking the Buffalo beer now, you know, that sort of thing. And like, I don't know, we've been up to, like, we were up in Montreal, we're probably drinking a bunch of like Labatts and Molson Canadians and like that sort of thing.
Yeah. Andy's really good about if we're in a place that has like regional beer that we can't get other places, that he will be like, oh, we should go and get an 18 pack of this or a 12 pack of this. Like now there's less of that. I think most of those breweries that maybe over the last 5 years when we were touring, you know, we're only regional or have now expanded out, like Cigar City or whatever, you know, things that you could only get down south are now kind of available everywhere. But Andy's usually the dude that when we're rolling in town, be like, okay, cool. Yeah, we're going to go to the venue, whatever, whatever. But we need to stop somewhere and grab this for later, you know?
Yeah.
So if we can't hit a brewery, he'll flag it down. So we'll go buy it.
He's definitely on the ball with that kind of thing. Yeah. I remember back in the day, like it was a big deal if you were going to like the like Pennsylvania or Baltimore area to make sure that you were drinking Yingling.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Like, do you remember that? Sure, like it was it was like, oh yeah, I'm drinking Yingling. Cool. I had a friend that I would always be like, hey man, I'm drinking some Yinglings right now. And then they brought it up here and it was like no one cared after like 2 weeks.
It's actually something that I really kind of miss about the last 5 years of beer. A lot of that expansion has been like necessity. And in fact, the last year of pandemic, we got like fucking 3 Floyds in Massachusetts now, like at the really terrible liquor store in my neighborhood. So it's like everywhere.
Yeah. I mean, like Bissell Brothers is sending their beer into stores, you know?
So yeah. I went and got Substance just like on a whim at the store up the street. I was like, what? I was shocked. What is this doing here?
I kind of miss the hunt and the like the connection to a place that you're like, all right, I'm in this place. I know that I can only get this here. For me, Gumball Head was like whenever I was in Chicago, and it hasn't been many times, but I knew that I could find it there. So I would always like seek it out and like find it on tap, like the Hop Leaf or something, and like go and do this like pilgrimage. And now I'm just like, if I want anything that exists in the world, I could just like walk out of my house, take 2 lefts, and then just decide. And there's not anything wrong with that, but I do miss that idea of chasing it. And when I worked at a store 10-11 years ago, people would come in and ask about Yingling like incessantly, and you'd have to be like, you can't. You'd be like, yeah, but what if I gave you an extra amount of money? Like, I can't, I don't have access. It's not like I'm hiding it from you, right?
Yingling and Fat Tire, right? People wanted That's those true. Beers, that was so bad. Yeah, and they both came here, and now no one gives a fuck.
Yep. I will say Foam in Burlington is still a pilgrimage brewery for me. Like, I love that we can't get it down here. I love their beer. I love the vibe at that brewery. I don't know if you guys have been, but they make excellent beer, and like they're just far enough from Church Street where you have to like seek it out, you know.
I never would have found it if you didn't send me there. Like, I was up there with my wife a couple years ago, and you were like, dude, you got to go to Foam. And so we just popped
it's
in great. There one
it's
afternoon.
Like, it's not a hidden gem anymore. It like when I first went, it wasn't popping off like it is now. I'm happy for them, obviously. Like, I want all good breweries to survive, but it is like you show up now, it's like line out the door, there's nowhere to stand, you know, because their beer is great, and they've got a cool spot. But yeah, that is still a pilgrimage spot for me, that I'm very happy when I get to roll into town, bring a couple growlers in, you know, even if I don't get to drink it there, you know, have it at the hotel room or when I get home or whatever. Yeah. Also just love Burlington as a beer destination.
It's a nice town. We're friendly with the folks at Sierra Gravity. Have made a few beers with those guys, and they're taking over the old Magic Hat spot now. So they're going to be like,
really,
yeah, they're going to be ramping it up if they haven't already. Their beer is excellent. And
cool. Yeah.
It's like, it's also like a round, which is handy, you know?
Yeah, the Conehead is definitely a beer that I've had in my fridge pretty much the entire pandemic. Like every time I'm into a store, just like, all right, good I need another six pack of that. Yeah, it's good. Like, yeah, you just got it there. Makes you feel comfortable knowing it's in there. It's a nice blue can. Come on.
Yeah. And the food situation at that brewery is awesome. Like, you can just get like cheese curds and like pretzels with spicy mustard and just like hang out for an afternoon. Like, it's the perfect hang spot. Like when my wife and I roll into Burlington, that's generally like the first spot we go. If it's like afternoon-ish, that's like the first spot we go to. It's a great hang.
Yeah, you get full, you get drunk, you go play a show at Monkey House. It's like the perfect weekend.
Have we played at Monkey House? I feel like we have.
We played this spot called, I think it was Jim's Basement. This dude, Jim, who has like basement shows regularly. And then we played live at 212.
No, 212, that's Maine. The 2121 was Maine.
212. No. Oh, wait. So, no. What was that? What's the venue on like the main drag when you're heading to Church Street in Burlington? There was an old DIY, like legendary DIY spot on the way in. All right, Googling. Sorry, bad podcasting.
Sorry, I brought it up.
Burlington. I think that was the last Burlington gig we had. Vermont.
Yeah, we haven't played out there for a long time.
Well, yeah, I mean, you guys haven't played anywhere in
a long time. That's 242 Main. 242 Main. That's the name of the spot. Yeah. There's a spot live at 212 in Maine.
Got it.
That is like oddly similar in name, but not the same place at all.
On the subject of not having played anywhere in a while, I realized a couple weeks ago, Kevin brought like a six pack of PBR tall boys to practice. And I was like, you know what? I don't think I've had a single PBR this entire pandemic. And you know what? I'm not going to until until I'm at until I'm at a dirty punk rock show. The next time I'm at in some dive or whatever, I'll drink a PBR there, but not until then.
There's nothing better than rolling up to a show in New York or the New York area and getting a shot of well whiskey and a lukewarm to like maybe mildly cold PBR.
I feel like
that is like
I feel like it's gonna be a bottle of Bud Heavy.
Oh, see, for me, it's whatever the comp. Like, there's a every bar has a combo, right? Like, it's like $7 for the well whiskey and beer. And you know, they never give you the tall boys. You know, correction, it's always a short PBR. It's like what bar sells short PBRs, but it's like cutting, like, you know, they have
bars that buy 30 racks to sell. they can't pay their distributor bills, so they just go to the liquor store and they go to Total Wine, buy some 30 racks. So like, we can resell this.
Yep.
Yeah, I'm all about that, getting their early happy hour like shot and cheap beer combo early.
Now, what was the place in New York? I don't know if you guys ever played at that. Used to do Sunday service. So you would like, they would do a punk rock show at night, but if you showed up early, they would give you lunch. And then you'd also ask to be sitting like on a Christian service. Oh, what the heck was this place? It was like the craziest place.
We played a place that would do happy hour from 5 to 6, trash bar. Like, it was just like, Chris, was it like, was it PBRs? It was some trash beer. And then we played a couple of shows there. And one of the times we went, we were like, specifically, we're going to get there for happy hour and we're going to drink our fill. We're going to drink as many of these beers as we can. And we sat in fucking traffic on the Mass Pike the whole, like,
we were all
trash bar used to do Sunday service.
No, it's that spot.
Yeah. I'm
not also surprised.
Google that. Trash bar is the place that used to do Sunday service.
I know the day you're talking about, Kevin, though. Like, we were all so amped on making it there. And like, what, we have to pay like an extra $1 or $2 for a beer. But like,
yeah, I know.
When we realized we weren't making it there for the happy hour, we were like, duh, damn it.
Well, we were also in Andy's SUV with no air conditioning in the middle of the summer. So we're all like shirtless in Andy's SUV, just like, what the fuck?
Oh, and we sitting had, in like, and yeah, you remember that was the hottest day of the year. And we also had, so this goes back to the tap thing. They had discontinued their Snowbound, which was the big, heavy old.
Yes.
And they were discontinuing it and rebranding. And they had like a pallet of this stuff. And whoever was down there working that day just called up everyone and was like, hey, we can't sell this beer. Come and get some beer. So we all showed up and like left there with cases and cases of this beer. Flash forward like 6 months later, the stuff's been sitting in our practice space in like 9,500 degree weather. And we're driving down to New York, and you know, obviously I don't recommend this, but we're in the third row, and a couple of us are like, yeah, we're in Connecticut. We're way in the third row. No one's going to care if we crack.
That's legal in Connecticut, man. That's
legal in Connecticut. Yes.
Okay. That's,
we debate this all the time.
We always have this argument. We're like, it's legal. It's legal. No, it's not legal. No, it's not legal, but we know.
Well,
how to do
it as professionals, keep on.
Yeah. As legal. Our podcast engineer will yell at us every time we mention when we break the law, this is legal.
You can do this.
But I got to tell you, drinking this like 100 degree thick brown old ale, man,
that should be illegal. You shouldn't be drinking hot old ale. The third
and it was like, you opened it up and it wouldn't stop foaming. I thought I was going to puke just from having a sip of it.
It was rocketing out of the bottle, and Chris just you know, tries to not get beer all over Andy's car. It's hilarious.
Yeah.
It's so funny.
That.
And then Chris is back row, and they don't know what to do with this bottle of hot old ale that neither of them want to drink. They're just like, what do we do with this?
We had to drink like, it whoa. Because it wouldn't stop foaming.
So
we had to drink the whole thing.
You were on the way to a performance?
We were on the way to Trash Bar.
Okay.
Trying to make happy hour.
Understood.
And we failed, but at least we got to drink that that foamy 100 degree, that foamy hot beer.
That's exactly how the brewer intended. You should really be drinking this out of the bottle in the back of an air conditioner.
I gotta say, preferably 8 or 9 months old.
This was like 2013, and I still to this day have one in my fridge. It's moved multiple apartments with me, and I'm gonna drink it. I always have a Christmas party every year. I'm gonna drink it on the 10 year anniversary of it.
Yeah, that's the way to do it.
Gonna crack it open and just be like, all right, everyone, hopefully people that were working at the brewery at the time, like Andy will be there and we can all split it. And
oh yeah, you're gonna want to split
it's gonna be like that Simpsons gag where just like it explodes. You're in a coma for months afterwards.
Yeah, you
hey, if I can recreate a classic Simpson moment, then happy to do it.
I do think that the right move there is to have a lot of people around, because you're not gonna want more than an ounce of this liquid in your mouth. You're gonna want to be passing that off. That's gonna be one of those, oh yeah, you should try this, like, here.
I don't think anyone's gonna feel bad about pouring that one out.
One sip, Kevin, you're gonna be there for it, right?
Yes,
you got my back.
I
with
hope
this
so. I
if I if so. If you know, if there's anything we can do to make sure that you guys are all there, we'll do it. I think it's important all you right. guys drink that. I have several bottles that have moved twice with me. Some of them are unlabeled. I have no idea. Every once in a while I just open one, and they're always trash. I don't know what.
I'm about to move and I have so much beer that I do not want to take.
If only you had friends that could help you drink beer.
Yeah,
if only.
That's what I'm gonna have to do.
Yeah, if only indeed.
Who wants this like 21st Amendment barley wine that's, you know, like 15 years old?
That's probably all right.
I remember. No, I opened another one. It was fucking gross.
We had some friends who lived out this way in Central Mass like years ago, and they did a West Coast vacation and they bought a bunch of sour beers while they were out there. I can't remember what brewery it was, but that's significant because they brought cases back home with them, and they had rented this house, and it was always a fucking 1,000 degrees in this house. Like, there was no air conditioning to be found, and there was a stink of empty sour beer bottles that was like in this hallway of their house. Like, I'm sure the beer was good. Like, I think some of it was Russian River, and then some of it was from somewhere else. But like, I can still remember the smell of like stale sour beer from that house that they rented. It was just like, ugh.
Yeah.
Like, I like sour beer every now and again, but something about that smell lingers with me when I drink one.
Those are powerful sense memories. It's really hard to shake one of those. So I feel you on that. That's unfortunate because Russian River does make great beers, but if you have that in your mind and you see that lovely Comic Sans font all over the back of their bottles, you might want to back away.
I'll always try it, and sometimes I'm pleasantly surprised. I don't like a ton of funk. I like a mild sure. amount. I definitely like some sweetness to balance it out. I'm not like, I can't go in the deep end like all funk, but you know, I dabble.
Well, it's worth dabbling in. There are some interesting flavors there to find. We do some of that stuff at Springdale, and it's probably the most fun we have creating stuff is playing around with barrels and what you can do. It's just so much different than like traditional brewing, so it's really fun to get into. It's also like hard, and you fuck up a lot along the way, and that's just kind of like part built into the process. So it's like an expensive, terrible terrible business practice that we love to do. So
I went to an event at the old Jack's Abbey location where they did a battle of the barrels.
Oh, yeah.
Where they split up the brewing team into teams and they did four different beers. So like, what, I guess it was beer that was already like existing, in tanks or whatever. And then each team had a certain amount of money to get ingredients. And then you could buy a sampler of the four different beers. And then people like voted on it. That was fun. I remember most of them being good. I can't recall.
Well, there were definitely some bad ones.
I can't recall. I can't recall what any of them were. This is probably 10 years ago or something. I mean, this was a long time ago, but yeah, that was cool. And like, and you all were kind of at the fore of that game. Cause like a lot of local breweries were just making like the hits. Right. And so not a lot of people were dabbling in barrel aging. Cause like, that's an expensive, process that takes a lot of time and takes a lot of care to do. Yeah, it's kind of cool to see how big that operation has gotten in like a relatively short amount of time. It's like
exploding. Well, we're actually going to turn 10 this summer, so that was probably like 7 years ago. So that is still a legendary thing in our Oz. I think you probably worked with the company when that happened, right?
No, it was right before I got hired, so it was like 8 years ago.
8 years ago, that's about right.
But yeah. I remember it happening. I remember like going down.
I think there's only one brewer left from that. I think Lashes would have been one of the guys involved. I know that
was Morse there.
Oh, good point. I don't know. Cohen and Jake Morse were two of the other guys who had a barrel. I think Jake's might have won because this thing like existed on. Jake just left us fairly recently to move to Maine and work for a Maine beer company. I think that the fact that he won it. I don't want to speak out of turn, but it was like a point of pride, like to the last day. And maybe still. I don't know. That was a cool thing we got a chance to do back then. I think those were like mini barrels too. They're like that. We still have one of them kicking around the brewery somewhere. Lord knows where it is now, but there was one of those like little tiny, like, I don't know, there's like a foot and maybe like has a couple of gallons in it. And there are a couple of different iterations, like sizes of them. And then we started collecting, 55 gallon barrels. And here we are. With many, many more of these very expensive, hard to sell, delicious things. But, it's fun to play around.
I went to your tap room before the pandemic hit when my
child was 9 years ago.
A wee baby child. So it was like end of 2019. Sure. It's a cool, very, very cool spot. I hadn't been to the new spot. It's not like at that time it wasn't new. You guys have been there for a while, but very cool spot. And Post Shift is a beer that I buy all the time, not to like shamelessly plug beer that Jack's Abbey makes, but like I love that beer. I buy it all the time. It is inexpensive and super delicious, and I drink it a lot. So speaking of beers that like I will just walk into a package store and buy six of, like on a Friday when I'm done with my work week, that is one that I frequently grab.
I will forever say it's my favorite Jack's Abbey beer until we make one that I like better. And then I won't say
it's anymore, great. But
yeah.
On a hot summer day, man.
Oz, what are your important thoughts about dry hop Post Shift? How does that factor into the ranking for you? Or does it?
I mean, I like dry hop Post Shift, but not as much as the original, because I think the original is so crisp and clean and drinkable. The double dry hop is good. It smells really nice, but it overdoes what I think was already a like perfect vessel of beer.
Hmm.
So it's like a special occasion thing, it's I enjoy it. I like it, but it's not something I can drink 12 of in an entire weekend and feel good about myself. So
in a weekend.
Yeah. At practice.
Yeah.
At practice when,
speaking songs of get in sloppy. A weekend, Kevin and I are heading up to the mountains tomorrow with a couple other guys.
Oh, which mountains?
White Mountains.
Nice.
Going to do a little camping, sit around the fire with probably a lot of beer.
Yeah. I won't tell you the amount that I gave Kevin. I see him drinking one now. But it was
he's an honest
boy. Okay, good for him.
Yes. Right down the middle. But we're going to the same place, so it really didn't matter. I just wanted to make sure that he had options.
I love the White Mountains.
Yeah, we did this trip last September where it was like, oh, there's a pandemic and we haven't hung out at all. We haven't done anything except sit in our houses. What can we do? We can go up to the mountains and sit in the field. And I mean, play some guitars, drink a bunch of beers, cook some food. So we're going to relive that glories of last September this weekend.
That's fantastic.
But I bring it up because, you know, this is a beer and music podcast and we'll have both beer and music with us. So,
Yeah, I do love a camp. Oz and I, maybe more myself, Kevin, you and I had a mutual friend who passed years ago, and that was the last time I played music really. With all that in my life, just kind of got attached to it. And so, you know, similar to what you're saying about work, you know, about working on something creative during a pandemic, like Oz asked me to go play music with them once during this pandemic. And I was like, yes, like, fine. Like, I'll figure this shit out. And so we've been in a,
what a mistake
it's been for really for him. Sorry. But
I just meant for you.
But now we're like in a
dealing with my shit.
Well, sure. now we're in a pandemic band. So when we got to practice last night, I was like, you know, this band that's like, you know, just put this great record out, they're going on a band camping trip. So I'm just saying, like, that's how I'm saying their success, how good this record is, they go on camping trips. We should go on a camping trip.
That's cool that you're back at it. I love to hear that, man. Like, that's great. What, so you guys are like getting together regularly?
We're a Wednesday night band. That's it so far.
Nice.
We have a brand new
Wednesday or Thursday.
We do some Wednesday night playing. Yeah. We were playing last night.
So often.
We have a singer who's never been in a band before. We have myself who took, you know, a 14-year detour into wherever long it's been. And then we have two guys named Matt who have been playing constantly for, you know, 20 years or whatever it is.
People named Matt usually are pretty good at music.
Just how it is, right? Every band should have at least two.
I think I've just done it long enough that I've lucked into some decency.
But I would definitely recommend camping for band activities. We always bring tents on the road whenever we tour, and sometimes we're pitching a tent in someone's backyard, like someone from the show. Like, hey, can we crash? Like, we don't need to come in the house. We can just go in the yard. And the last tour we did, we had a day off, so we all camped on a hill in Indiana or something. And had like a wonderful night. We just sat there, like, quietly listened to music. Like, there were no other tents on the hill. Like, the campsite was set up into two parts, like one where all the RVs were. And that was like, if you were in an RV, your neighbor RV was probably 4 feet away from your RV.
Sure.
And they're like, oh, well, we're mostly RVs, but you can put a tent up on that hill. We go up on the hill. There's not a single person up there. It's completely open and beautiful. It's dusk. There's like fireflies like blinking on in and out and everything. And we're like, cool, got a fire going, made some food, cracked open some beers, like, you know, a couple gummies if you're living that life, and just kind of like had like a Monday night off night from tour, and it was really quite nice, I must say.
Yeah, I'm pretty much a no shows on Monday night of tour unless something great pops up at this point.
You know, the funny thing about that is, like, we have always had really good Monday night recurring shows in this area. Like,
locally.
Yeah. Like, Daniel puts on a great one at Charlie's, and Harley was doing a great one at up in Salem at Opus for a while.
Yeah.
So it was like, for the longest time, it'd be like, people would be like, really? You're playing a show on a Monday night or locally? It's like,
yeah. It's like, and a ton of people are going to be there, and it's going to be fucking awesome.
It's like, let me tell you this. if a band is coming to Boston and they're playing on a Monday night or the Boston area, they're going to have like the best Monday night they've ever had on tour.
Yeah. Cause Monday's terrible, but yeah, the Monday Chris is describing, one of the best Mondays on tour we've ever had. I just scheduled an off day. I'm like, I'm not even doing it. Like it, I would rather just, so we played Pittsburgh on the Sunday night and we were playing, Chicago was the next booked show. So we were just going to drive all day Monday and then just camp and have fun. And it was the best. So we just like drank beer and ate food and just hung out.
Wild, awesome. Salacious stories of rock and roll, wholesome camping.
Dude, those are the best. The best nights are just like hanging. Sure. Like, you get a couple of great shows under your belt and then you just like get the hang with the guys and then just like rip a bunch. Cause like the show days are like, you drive a bunch, you get to the place, you unload, you set up the merch table, you get your gear inside, you talk to the person, you get, you know, the show starts, you play the show, you sell the merch, you settle up, you get in the van, you go to where you're sleeping. Well, hopefully you know where you're sleeping. If you don't, you find a place to sleep. You sleep some amount and then you're in the van. Most people are sleeping except the person driving and navigating, and then you're off to the next place. Like, that's not like hanging.
Right.
So like that kind of Monday hang that Chris is describing is like, it's actually like kind of like, not to like, not to make too much of it, but it's kind of like cleansing. Sure. It's like, okay, we can hang as friends for a night and not have to worry about, like, because the shows are awesome. Like, I love playing shows. It's my favorite part of being in a band by far. But you know, in the middle of a tour, if you can stop and breathe a little bit, it's awesome.
Though it does raise the question, like, Monday night is obviously a good night if you're like an industry person, like, you know, if you work in like the service industry. So like, we have good Monday nights around here. Maybe other cities do too, and we just don't know the people booking those shows.
Well, holler at us, people listening to this podcast. Yeah, have those shows.
So we're like we're like camping out on a hill in Indiana with all our gear, and like meanwhile, like 10 miles away, there's like some rad rock and roll happening that we could be a part of. But like, you know, if we don't know about it, then what are you going to do?
Well, you know, you need to be able to recharge the energy to then bring the energy back. I think Kevin makes a good point with that.
It's true.
So yeah. coming back into the present, have you guys booked any post COVID shows?
Yeah, so we have a date that is held at Obie's in early October. We can't announce it yet, but it should be our local album release show. If all goes as planned, we should be announcing that pretty soon.
Yeah, still somewhat tentative, but that's what we're working on sometime in there.
And then got another thing that might be happening. Nothing we can announce formally yet, but yeah, just getting back to practicing and getting back into show shape and being a band again.
If you were fantasy booking the bands to play your record releases, I'm sure you're actually doing. Who do you want to play this record release show?
Well, if I was to hypothetically say bands that like maybe we've already talked to about
all hypothetical
playing this show, they would both be bands that put out music during the pandemic. One of them is In the Meantime. We already mentioned them earlier from Peabody. They put out a great EP. And then our friends Denzel put out an awesome new record to support their friend who's in need of some medical help. And so part of the proceeds from their record is going towards his medical bills. And then there's another slot, TBD. If I was to fantasy draft that slot, of like any band ever, like,
sure, why not?
Any reasonable band you'd want to play with?
So any reasonable band, I would say Progress from Connecticut. They are a defunct melodic hardcore band that we have done a ton of shows with and toured with, and we miss them all a great deal. So I would resurrect Progress and bring them back for that show.
That's reasonable.
For prep on this, I only wrote one real question, and I thought it was kind of snarky, and I was like, I'm just gonna like wait and see if I can talk about melodic hardcore, because I see you guys describing yourself in a variety of ways, and then you and think on your Spotify bio you're like, or just call us melodic hardcore, call us whatever you want.
Yeah,
I'm like, I feel like melodic hardcore, and I like bands that describe as melodic hardcore, like things that I understand as melodic hardcore. I also think melodic hardcore is funny because it's like you're kind of saying that hardcore isn't melodic otherwise. And I'm like, I feel like, I don't know. I think it's an interesting term. I don't think it's not a snarky question to you guys, but how do you guys deal with that moniker? Do you like melodic hardcore as a descriptor?
I mean, the descriptor exists, sure. Right? So it's like, if your band sort of fits into the term that is out there that people use for those absolutely types of bands, then like you're just using a term that exists. Whether or not I agree with the term as it stands, I mean, I don't know.
I think probably everyone has their own like definition of it too. Like I could look at a band like Have Heart and say like their first record was like more of like traditional like brutal hardcore with like breakdowns and stuff, and their second record was like more melodic hardcore, you know. I could like split hairs. Sure. Like that, like, so I don't know, that's kind of the thing, like I don't know. I don't think it like, yeah. I don't know. It's
an interesting question. Cause like,
yeah,
it's a real, there's a lot of genre based, you know, identifiers that are really vague. Cause like, if you called us just a punk band, I don't think that really says what it is. Right. And like, so like melodic punk has been a thing that we've been called before. Skate punk has been a thing we've been called before. Melodic hardcore has been a thing we've been called before. And like, I think it depends on which songs those people have heard. Cause like you could hear groups of like three or four songs of ours and be like, oh, that's a melodic hardcore band. That's totally possible. But then you could hear a different four songs. Like the A side of that split I gave you, Joe, like it's the first song is like a total like pop rock kind of song. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like you definitely would not associate that song with a melodic hardcore band, but there are songs from like our first record. You're like, okay, like, yeah, that sure. falls into that wheelhouse. So I think it really depends on what you're listening to of ours and like, and what you define that as. But I mean,
whatever. Yeah, whatever is the real answer to the question. I
for some reason, at all. I would rather not define us that way at all if we didn't have.
I don't know, you know why, you know, my brain is wired this way, but at some point in time, I think the first time I heard what melodic hardcore was, I also heard 88 Fingers Louie. And every time, I don't even know what that band is. I think I heard one song on a comp and I'm always like, that's that for me, that for some reason, that's the North Star of melodic hardcore. So
the bass player from 88 Fingers was the bass player for Rise Against, right? I think that's the through line. And then Rise Against's first record was like a super melodic hardcore record. Like when they first came on the scene, when I first started watching that band, they were definitely a melodic hardcore deep. Band, like mostly yelly, sometimes singing, like very fast. Like when I was going to see them at skate parks and stuff, when I was like 16, 17, like that's what that band was, you know, a far cry from what that band is today, obviously. But yeah, dude, that guy, that's a hell of a bass player.
You know what I always thought of? I think for me, melodic hardcore always meant like, do you guys remember With Honor?
I don't.
Yeah.
They were like a Connecticut hardcore band. Anyways, they were definitely yelly. I think they were probably like straight edge, like in the vein of like Bane or something like that. But they were really fast, really aggressive. Aggressive vocals, but if you listen closely, the like instrumentation on it was like beautiful. Like the guitar players were just playing these like really intricate arrangements, and I feel like if they played them slow on an acoustic guitar or something like that, they wouldn't have had to have changed a note for it to be like this kind of like just like, you know, like just like beautiful like interaction of like tones and harmonies and melodies and stuff. And that's a band that first EP of theirs is from like 2002 or 2003. And I remember that was like right around the time I was kind of getting introduced into like that type of music. And so like you just said, you had your North Star of it. That would probably be like my North Star of it. And so I have that image of like, yeah, it's aggressive, but like if you look beyond that, like if you look beyond that kind of like surface layer of aggression, there's like a lot of like really kind of like intricate, like pretty stuff sure. happening. Not to say that like a band that's not considered melodic hardcore, a band that would be like like brutal hardcore, you know, or whatever you want to call it, that they don't also have those like those undertones. But like I just listen to that and I'm like, all right, this is like, that's like a feature. That's like a defining feature of this particular band. Like those melodic arrangements sure. that are happening underneath the surface of like, of the like in your face screaming and like, you know, that shit that makes you want to pile on. And
yeah, I mean, I feel like the hardcore,
do the thing.
Hardcore is kind of like a touchstone for a lot of us who grew up listening to aggressive music. And it's like that expression of, aggression is part of who myself and a lot of my friends are. And then we also, I don't know how you guys grew up with music, but for me, it was like in the house was like 70s, like pop rock in the background. So there's like deep melodies that are just ingrained.
Same.
So Chicago over here, what up?
Oh yeah.
I feel like I just don't pay attention to labels because you're saying melodic hardcore. And I'm like, I don't think I've ever heard anything labeled as melodic hardcore.
In my life. You have.
And I'm like, what did they talk? I probably have, but I literally called something punk or melodic punk. I'm like, never heard that chained together either. No idea what.
It gets granular.
I don't look at descriptors of shit.
You'll get a headache if you think about it too much. It's like, I mean, a lot of this stuff is just like things that people have like said, like, oh, you sound like, I remember the first time someone called a skate punk, like Jim, our other guitar player, was like, I don't know what skate punk is. Like, I've never heard that term before.
That happens a lot. That's like probably the most common one. Honestly, like that's the one that keeps coming up. And I think basically like if you play to a DB often enough, and like you're not yelling your vocals, that's what the thing is. I don't know. It's becoming a more and more common question. I think with streaming and stuff, like those platforms want to categorize you. So they're like, what are you? Use the most like accurate description. You're like, I don't know. Like I'm gonna pick four of these, and I guess you can pick which one we are. It's a weird thing. I don't love doing it, but you know. It's the same reason why we just categorize ourselves as Massachusetts instead of picking a city, like, because the five of us are from different cities. So like, we just say we're from like Massachusetts, USA.
And sometimes we move to different cities because no one's really that embedded wherever they are.
Well, we're not going to claim Boston. Like none of us live in Boston. So like we're from Massachusetts. That's where we're from. Like,
that's fair.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like if you were,
my old bands used to use it where our practice space was. Just like that's where our stuff is.
I don't
is.
Like that. I don't want to be from Malden.
Yeah, well, I don't want to do it now. I definitely don't want to do it now. Fuck Malden and everything.
Yeah.
I mean, we claimed Lowell for a long time because that's where we played like 90% of our shows.
I would see that
shows.
For you,
like,
Kevin. I would see that.
Yeah, well, for the first couple of years, that's where we were playing. We were playing the Ant Cellar all the time. We were playing like the Worthen all the time. And then slowly we moved to playing Salem a ton. And like now we play Boston as much as we play anywhere else, but still it's like, we wouldn't claim to be a Boston band. You know,
I forget who did this, but it was in Lowell and I forget which band it was, but they were like, oh yeah, when we say where we're from, like it depends where we are. If we're out of state, we're a Boston band. If we're in Boston, we're a Lowell band. If we're a Lowell band, we're just like, we're from Drake.
I mean, that I think that's true for a lot of people. Like, you know, I don't know.
Or like Bill Ricka.
The further you are away from
that's
home,
not a bad policy, honestly.
Yeah,
I mean, depending on who your audience is, like, they don't give a shit. They just want to know kind of where you're from. I think the first time we played Fest and they asked us for a geographic identifier, I said Boston-ish.
We're the only band and the entire thing that had ish in their thing. I remember looking through the list of bands and seeing Boston-ish for us and everyone else, like, claiming a city and stuff. I was like,
hey, guys, they don't all live in all those cities. They're not all from, you know, all those places.
Well, they're not as honest.
That's true.
As
y'all are honest, honest individuals.
As proven by the beer share earlier.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, I appreciate what you guys are doing. I appreciate you guys drinking beers with us and hanging out. It's been really nice to reconnect with you, Kevin, and to meet you, Chris.
Yeah, man. Likewise.
It's been a good long to see time. You. I was trying to think of what, yeah, I mean, man. Besides running time. Into you at randomly at that, beer event in New Jersey years ago. I could not think of the last time we were together, but it was probably been upwards of a decade. So,
yeah, I mean, I was talking to our mutual friend, Joe McFadden, last night, and I was trying to place the last time I had seen you prior to the beer fest. And I was like, man, yeah. I mean, at least 11, 12 years.
That
probably.
Sounds about right. Yeah. Unfortunately.
Yeah. But man, great to see you and talk to you, man. This has been so much fun. I can't believe it. It feels like we're getting to the end of this, and it feels like we just started.
So,
fun time. Maybe I'll see you at a Revs game.
I'll be there. Man.
We'll drink a BBC.
I'll definitely be there.
BBC coffee porter. What's that coffee?
Dean's beans.
Dean's beans.
Yeah, that brand. Yes,
that's a great. That's a it great, is a great beer. Beer. As far as like it coffee is. Porters,
especially
go,
when it's on nitro.
That beer has been great forever. Like in that genre, that beer has just been like $4 a bottle, like approachably like priced, and just a tasty, tasty beer.
Get some
forever.
Get some for camping. Sounds like a good breakfast brew.
Dude, we've got these Mocha.
Oh yeah, those Mocha Boys are good. Those are inspired by for sure.
Oh, that's washing down my breakfast sando. Mm-hmm. I don't drink
fan of a dark beer in the morning on camping days.
I don't drink a lot of breakfast beers, but when I do, it's pretty much always out like camping or you know, some type of like outdoor events going on, you know. So I like cooking up the bacon and eggs over the fire, you know, and like having that like tall, frothy, like dark beer to like sip down.
Yeah, live that hedonistic lifestyle, my man. That is the way to do it.
Oh, it's exquisite, I gotta say.
Mm-hmm.
Well, when you guys are playing shows with this new Pandy project, you know, message your boys. We will. You know, let's try to get something going.
We would love to do that. You know, we just got to write a bunch more music and, you know, learn how to play it. Don't worry about it.
We got like 15 half songs. That's like so
perfect. That means you have seven or eight songs.
That's a lot of songs.
Man, I look forward to our next y'all. I appreciate y'all hanging out. Did we miss anything from our extensive show notes, Oz?
No, I think we nailed it. I got to talk about the guitar fade out. That's the one.
That was a very specific note. You caught me off guard with that one. I was like, oh shit.
I was just like, I listened to it probably when it came out, and I remember thinking about it, and then I went back to listen to it today, and I was like, oh yeah, that fucking instrument fade out.
I honestly think when we were coming up with that song, I asked Jim to like, I was like, dude, just rip like a big 70s guitar solo and we'll just fade it if we ever record it. And that's exactly what happened.
Perfect.
Yep.
It's never great. Happens anymore. It's fucking fantastic.
Yeah, it's interesting when we write stuff. It's like, you know, we're very democratic, like almost to a fault. And then sometimes something like that happens and it's like, yeah, that's what that song is. Like, could it change? Sure. Could it be shortened? Maybe. But like, that's what that song is. Like,
well,
will it get played live? Who knows?
I'm excited for y'all to be up on your knobs, just turning it down slowly and playing the same.
I expect like O'Brien's to have put a curtain in and like the curtain just comes down.
Who knows what kind of work. Actually, I walked by O'Brien's the other day and it looks like they closed yesterday. It looks just like bottles of beer lying on the bar.
Dude, I cannot wait to drink a Miller High Life in O'Brien's.
That is correct.
Again,
man, as long as Daryl still works there, that's all I care about.
Man, that tiny little stage that we play way too loud on, I have missed greatly. Of the spots I've missed, I cannot wait to get back to it. Yeah, man.
Four months.
God,
we see you there. I look forward to it.
Probably enough time that I can leave my newborn baby alone, right?
All
right. Oh, you just had one?
Now she's due September 1st. That's why I'm like,
oh.
Yeah, so I was trying to get him to go to that older choke up show, which is like September 4th or something. I'm like, you'll be fine.
Yeah, it's September 3rd. Yeah.
we'll definitely see you there. Yeah, we'll be there.
We just got tickets.
I will see you there. I'll play see you first.
I already told Daniel if I'm allowed to sneak out, he has to get me in. So he's like, sure, no problem.
I told him exactly that.
I'm like, my baby's coming. I don't know if I'm going to be able to go, but if I want to go, will you let me in? He's like, yeah, of course. No problem. Sure.
To anyone listening, us excluded, a ton of awesome fucking bands put out music during this pandemic. And they didn't want to do it. they wanted to do it the way they'd always pictured doing it. They wanted to tour. They wanted to further their growth as a band. They wanted to experience touring after putting out a record, and they didn't get to. So if anybody listening to this knows a band who put out music during the pandemic, I'm not talking about us. I'm saying I know personally of a ton of bands who put out music that I love during the pandemic. Think about picking up a release from them, maybe on a Bandcamp Friday, but just whenever you think of it, because those bands really, really appreciate that kind of support when they can't be out playing. So we're going to close it out. That's the way I'd like to close it
out. And check them out when they do play.
That's right, man.
Yes. No better way to end it than that.